Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 3:51 p.m. that is Central Time. Today is August 30th. Well, I thought I'd kick off with Australia because the market was up. Probably one of the more dynamic moves we've had globally today. It still has this inverted head and shoulders pattern, and it's certainly responding to some speculation around just how eager the Chinese authorities are going to be to support the economy. What was interesting, though, today was that the Chinese markets were not in positive territory, but they weren't down very much either. And then Japan, the banks continue to pop on the upside. So that's generally a fairly bullish phenomenon. Now, when we think about Europe, well, there was some, I think, second guessing around the outlook for renewable energy, where Ørsted pulled back exceptionally sharply today. And that really does help to highlight just how dependent on low interest rates some of these renewable energy projects are. They're very capital intensive. And then the amount of time that it will take to pay back the loans to build these operations is kind of up in the air because we're talking about intermittent supply. So it's very dependent on what exactly happens with the weather. And obviously that's not really great news. Now, what's also I think interesting here is that Wall Street was in positive territory today. The dollar was weaker, and precious metals were a little bit steadier. And then, of course, when we think about the oil price, well, it's still holding the breakout, but it's not performing either. And then we had the big pop on the upside yesterday for crypto, and it was in mildly negative territory today. Certainly nothing in the way of a downward dynamic. But I think there's probably a little bit of pause here as we wait in anticipation of what the SEC is going to come back and say, probably by the end of the week. Then, when we look at some of the more interesting charts, I think I'll be spending quite a bit of time today looking at some of the soft commodities. When we look at what's going on right now, I think some of the rules that have been implemented in Europe, whether it is the extraterritorial ambitions of the European Union to enforce their climate doctrine on third-party countries that want to export their goods into the EU. I think when those rules were being conceived, I think a lot of people thought that it was going to be aimed probably at manufactured goods from China. I don't think people really thought about the impact it would have on cocoa growers in the Ivory Coast. That is, however, what is helping to put upward pressure on cocoa prices. So there's certainly a bit to unpick there. But let's just kick off and look at what's going on in Australia here. So we have the upward dynamic. But then I think it's important to also highlight that what was the biggest performer in here today? And I think two that really stood out were BrainChip and Fortescue Metals. Now, BrainChip is a one of these companies that purports to, or at least is saying that they're developing a product for a human brain interface, or I guess a machine brain interface. And obviously then you have Elon Musk is trying to do the same thing, but at least BrainChip has been around a while now, but the share is very clearly trending downwards, and it has completely unwound the big surge on the upside that we saw in 2022. It's in fact one of the worst performing shares in the Australian market this year. And I think it's a very big question whether it's ever going to make any money. Then, of course, you have Fortescue. Well, it's an iron ore miner, but they have aspirations to be the biggest supplier of hydrogen in the world. And the share was in up in positive territory in a fairly dynamic manner in here today, and you have a bullish engulfing pattern on the week. And iron ore prices have been reasonably steady. And that is on the continued investment in, for example, high-speed railways. Now, I've seen high-speed railways being described as a gray rhino for the Chinese economy. In other words, it's something that is an enormous project, the risk of which is not really being appreciated. They have built tens of thousands of miles of high-speed railways over the course of the last 20 years, with no real consideration for whether they're ever going to be profitable. But there's one thing for sure is laying thousands of miles of track is certainly going to be steel intensive. So that's something that is helping to support the iron ore price, even if the property sector is really under a great deal of stress. Now, when we think about the Shanghai Property Index, well, it's been completely range bound for the last 8 years, and nothing has really changed there. This isn't in any way reflective of the condition of the domestic the property sector. And Country Garden today, it is looking increasingly likely that it will eventually be completely delisted, and the share remains in a steep downtrend overall. But of course, the magnitude of the problem, the fact that we're talking about a total debt figure for China that jumped from about $17 to $53 trillion in 10 years. This is an incredible period of leverage since Xi Jinping took office. And the coincidence there that he took office in 2013, and since then, total debt in the economy has tripled. I think we can resoundingly conclude that it's his fault. But that's certainly not how it's going to be painted. And all of that money, that could have created incredible leaps in terms of productivity. But the bigger challenge, of course, is that it was plowed into infrastructure and into the housing sector, despite the fact that those are or that you'd get a lower return for the money invested. So I think China definitely has issues here. It's too big to fail, but too big to rescue, I think, is one of the ways in which it's been described. But what that basically is a rescue will be eventually introduced, but probably not on the scale that everyone's hoping for. And that would suggest that we're going to have continued choppy markets. And the H share index was in mildly negative territory today, but it is firming from the 6,000 level. And I think that it's more likely than not that what we're going to have is a rebound as soon as more stimulus is announced. And that kind of move could last for several months, and then it'll roll over. And in fact, that is basically what we've seen from China on repeated occasions over the course of the last decade. There have been plenty of times when it was depressed and rebounded, and those rebounds don't last for more than about 6 to 8 months at a time, and then we get additional downside. And I suspect that's exactly what we're going to have on this occasion as well. Now let's just look at what's going on in Japan. So the Nikkei was up 100 points, and this looks like a fairly benign process of consolidation as it unwinds the short-term overbought condition. When we think about the banking sector, well, the fact that 10-year yields are rising, and that is improving yields overall, it might even result in Japanese banks beginning to get some interest income. So they are now pushing on to new closing highs, and we haven't seen a move like this in Japanese banks in really quite a long time. And this is on the cusp now of completing a effectively 15-year base formation. So I think we do need to pay attention to these facts because we have Wall Street, which has been the clear outperformer for the last 10 years. And now we have several other markets that are just beginning to fire on the upside. So Japan is certainly one of those. Then, just staying in Asia for the moment, the Indonesian market popped on the upside but couldn't hold it today, and is still ranging now below the 7,000 level. And the Vietnamese market has been attracting a lot of interest because of VinFast. But the dong is still depreciating, but that is helping to support the recovery in the domestic market. And the Vietnam index is popping on the upside. I think it's really quite interesting what's happening with VinFast Auto. And the share surged on the upside. And at one point last week, it had a greater market cap than half of the stocks on the Dow Jones. And it was even larger than Goldman Sachs. Now the price has started to come back down. One thing that I think is most particularly relevant here is that there might be 2.3 billion shares, but there's only a float of about 1% of them, or less than 1% of them. When we think then if the float is only 7 million shares and the price is $40, that's not a market cap of 95 billion. It's what this has perhaps been was a very successful marketing exercise. I don't think anyone had ever heard of VinFast Auto before about 2 weeks ago. Now everyone has heard of it because suddenly it's making international headlines on a float that is blindingly small. And it's also, as a result, exceptionally difficult to short. So this buying was over a limited supply. And the selling is because even with limited supply, you can't get people to hold on to it indefinitely. So it's quite likely that it is going to completely unwind the advance. I don't think this is really a good example of a return of the meme share frenzy that we had in 2020. I think this was a very heavily orchestrated event. Now let's turn our attention to Europe. Well, the DAX index was in, well, I guess really fairly quiet in here today and is still consolidating in the region of the peaks over the course of the last few years. But this remains a clear uptrend overall, and we're still significantly above where the peaks were back in 1999 and 2007. Of course, the DAX is a total return index. But I don't think that's a major factor in that outperformance. The fact that you have large numbers of global companies in the index and those that are really thriving is probably a better explanation. Then the Europe Stoxx 600, it looks like this is a big first step above the base, and it was ranging below the 2007 peak. For, well, I guess let's just get enough history. There was a very clear resistance in the region of the peaks from 2000 all the way until 2020. And then, of course, we had the big drawdown. And subsequently, now we're seeing support coming through in the region of the upper side of this long base formation. And this, in addition to what's happening in Japan, is, I think, confirmation that we're starting to see a better or more cohesive argument for why some of these markets have the potential, at least, to outperform US markets. But of course, that is not going to be a totally convincing argument until the mega caps really roll over, and that was not the case in here today. But the dollar index is starting to come back down. So there were some economic news items in here today, but most particularly jobs growth. And the reality is that the US economy is slowing down. So the dollar index is now encountering resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average. There's still a sequence of lower rally highs. And we've had follow-through on yesterday's decline. Now it is closing out the day right in the region of that 200-day moving average. There is the potential here that we've had a good-sized rebound from the 100 level and the 1000-day, and now there's the scope for some further downside. If gold breaks, excuse me, if the dollar breaks down through 100, then it's quite likely that gold will pop on the upside. And gold prices are still rebounding. We're up about $4 in here today and steadying from the region of the 200-day moving average. Silver is beginning to outperform gold and leading on the upside. So there's certainly a temporal leadership here where it started to do better than gold before gold steadied. Now the price is right in the region of the upper side of this short-term range, and it wouldn't be that surprising if we were to see some consolidation. Now, I want to just pay some attention to the fact that bond yields have started to come back down, and the 10-year yield has encountered resistance in the region of the peak from back in last October. Now, it's not back below 4% yet, and it hasn't broken the sequence of higher reaction lows. And I think the bulls would argue that this is just some mild consolidation in the region of the peaks from last year. But I remain of the view that we are more likely than not to see a deflationary shock, and that the process of balance sheet runoff and contraction in central bank balance sheets, every time that has been attempted, it has led to a deflationary shock. And I think that is a more salient point than the fact that interest rates have been going up so much. So then, of course, the bigger question is, are we going to see some inflationary pressures moderate and others start to pick up again? So oil is by far the most important of the commodities, and the price is steadying. It has bounced from the region of the 200-day moving average. It has broken the sequence of lower rally highs, and there is the potential that we could see additional upside here. So I think that is a very clear possibility. And the most clear bullish argument is that we're starting to see greater geopolitical tensions, and the coup in Gabon is not a big producer, but it is a coup within an OPEC member. And then, of course, we have the fact, or I guess it is not a fact yet, but the assumption that the Permian Basin in the USA is hitting its peak production. And that would lend greater power to OPEC in its attempts to set prices. But the more important point here is that the price action very clearly suggests that there is potential for upside in the oil price. And the reality is that higher oil prices are a tax on consumption, and on top of that, they are a tax on production. So the producing just about everything else becomes more expensive as oil prices advance, and oil shares are beginning to steady here and are pushing back up towards that psychological $90 area. But I think what's happening in the soft commodities is perhaps something that's underappreciated right now. So cocoa prices are popping on the upside, and this has been a well-developed trend already, and it's still moving higher. This is really quite a dynamic move that we're seeing in here this week, and it is clearing the peaks from back in 2014 and 15 and coming back up into the peaks that were set back in 2011. And we are approaching at least a closing high, and I think arguably, this, let me just, I can zoom in and we'll just confirm it, but the potential at least is that we are a day away from a new closing high. So this is a phenomenally big move that we've had in the cocoa price over the course of the last year, and that's going to have a knock-on effect on the price of sweets. And when people look at what they're spending, well, if you go to the filling station and you're paying more for your gasoline or your diesel, then that's certainly something that people become immediately aware of. Then, when they pick up a chocolate bar, when they're paying at the till, to the extent that people still go inside to pay, they're going to notice how much more they're paying for that as well. So there's certainly going to be some inflationary pressures as a result of that. But then sugar prices are also steadying in here. And white sugar has popped up to test the upper side of this range that's been forming now for the last 6 months, but this is still finding support in the region of the 200-day moving average, and the trend remains reasonably consistent. But then we should just think about the fact that the reason that cocoa prices are rising is because not only of the inability of farmers to source fertilizers and the high cost of fertilizers, but also because of regulations. And the imposition of deforestation rules from the EU and the difficulty of local farmers to prove that their plantations were not built on deforested areas because, of course, the question is how long ago was the deforestation the time limit? But I think it's important to look at other tropical agricultural products, and rubber is a big one of those. And the price has been ranging for the last few years, but it looks like a first step above the base, and it is now currently rallying from the lower side of that range. So, and this is really quite a dynamic manner, a mood, excuse me, dynamic move that we've had over the last week. And then the other one, and we do see a lot of negative commentary about deforestation relating to palm oil. And the price is also starting to steady in here. And having really surged during the pandemic, prices came all the way back down and have subsequently begun to find support at the upper side of the underlying base formation. And the price is also firming up inside this range here. And both the rubber price and palm oil are going to be susceptible to exactly the same kind of pressures that cocoa is. So, by and large, these commodities have absolutely nothing in common, but they are all dependent on tropical conditions, and all have been accused of deforestation at one time or another. So these are, I think, important developments. I'm kicking myself that I closed out my rough rice position and my oats position for that matter, and prices have continued higher. Rough rice prices have broken on the upside and are still now extending that advance. Now, there's a big step in the chart on several occasions, actually, back in 2020 and then earlier this year, and that's because of contangos. But the price continues to move on the upside here, and that the Indian export ban is on every variety other than basmati, and that's helping to support prices. Then cotton, which tends to be very water dependent, is also starting to firm within its base formation. There's the potential that it's going to break on the upside. And then oats prices, the majority producer is Canada, and there's been a drought in Western Canada, so the price has broken on the upside. And now the next question is whether it's going to consolidate from here. Now, the lumber price has been discontinued, and now we're in a new, there's a new commodity, or there's a new ticker for it. So we're not going to have the same kind of back history as we had in the past, but prices are still really quite depressed. So at least that is a media a moderating factor in the construction of homes, for example. But several of the non-standard food commodities do look like they're going to break on the upside. And the vast majority of people really only pay attention to wheat, corn, and soybeans. And these are the ones that haven't been expressing, or they haven't been demonstrating a lot of demand dominance. So the wheat price is back in the region of the $6 level, and corn prices are also really quite depressed. I did see news stories talking about the yield on corn being lower because of the inavailability of groundwater, but that's certainly not being reflected in the price. And I think that this is another example of how very isolated news items are being used to make a general argument, and I don't think that that it is necessarily true. But now let's just simply pull back and think about that. If agricultural commodity prices are likely to push on the upside and oil prices have broken the downtrend, well, we're going to find out pretty soon just how much of the pullback in commodities are, excuse me, how much of the pullback in inflation was because of commodities and how much of it was because of astute economic management. So that's obviously going to have an impact on how central banks react. And stocks have been really quite steady, despite the fact that the dollar is coming down and yields have compressed. Investors are willing to bet that we're going to completely avoid a recession and that the Goldilocks scenario of moderating inflation and still strong earnings is something that is the base case. Well, I think it's very unlikely, but this has been a quite impressive rebound from the Nasdaq over the last 2 days. And so far, this is still a fairly consistent consolidation in the region of the previous peak. And I don't think anyone is particularly panicked right now. And the VIX index is coming back down, and it has been down for consecutive days now. And coming back down below the 15 level. So we're certainly seeing longer dated volatility beginning to moderate. So we're still in a benign environment on the stock market, even though monetary conditions are tightening. We should certainly be prepared, at least, that commodity price inflation could surprise on the upside, even as deflationary forces become more entrenched, particularly as wage demand growth moderates, as the number of available jobs starts to contract. So I think there is the possibility that what we could be in for is more of a stagflationary environment. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.